if we put our clients first, like we're always going to win. We did that in the past when we first started working with investors, you know, several years ago, and that's how we're going to end up with, you know, $1 billion in assets.
Welcome to the MediaCorp Minute Podcast. My name is Josh Langmaid. I own a video agency here in Rochester, Minnesota. Today, I'm joined by Nick Stagerberg. Nick and Elaine, his wife, own and manage Black Swan Real Estate, a real estate investment firm, property management company, specializing in apartment buildings and single-family homes here in Rochester, Minnesota. In just a few years, they have built a portfolio of over 600 doors and $130 million through fanatical dedication to serving both investors and tenants. Nick, it's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. I wanted to just start getting into, like, I mean, obviously you did a lot in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And before we kind of get into where things are at now, diving into the history and just growing up, was there things that maybe led you into an entrepreneurial path, an investment path that you're on today?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I've always enjoyed entrepreneurship. I did a DECA as like a high school club, and that's where you compete in management and marketing. Like, you have 5 minutes to prepare a 15-minute presentation.
Really?
On some kind of, you know, problem. You pose as the assistant manager of a restaurant, and you're supposed to do a presentation to the owner of the restaurant or something of how you're going to fix this new competition, you know, that's moving in or something. I enjoyed selling candy, you know, fundraisers. Yep. Those kind of things. And I even sold note cards. I'm dating myself a little bit here, but having the ability to print, like, fine print was like new technology when I was mm-hmm. a kid in school. So the teachers would let you have like an 8.5 by 11 card, and I would shrink down to like a 3-point font, you know,
really?
As much information as I
yep.
could, and I would sell note cards to the
that
test.
That is fantastic.
You know, just trying to create a business, you know, fulfill a need anywhere. It's not something I'm super proud of, but
right.
I don't know. I think it's representative.
It's just part of growing up and like
exactly.
what you did. Yeah, it got you.
Exactly.
Where.
Ran a produce stand through college. I feel like I learned everything you need to know about business, you know, in that kind of setting. You know, negotiating a multi-million dollar real estate deal is nothing compared to negotiating over a nickel for an ear of corn with, you know, someone who has nothing better to do with their time
yep.
than try to haggle over the price of an ear of corn. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. You learn lessons that way. And I've always had some kind of business going, you know,
yeah.
throughout my whole life.
Now, where'd you grow up? And then, I'd love to get into, you know, kind of college area, where you went to college, and then kind of just beyond there. But growing up wise, where was that at?
Yeah, I'm a Rochester native here. So,
you are?
Yeah, I grew up in Rochester here, graduated from John Marshall class of 01 and, or 2000. I always mix that up for some reason. And you know, lived in Minneapolis for a couple of years somewhere in there. And then I moved to Oklahoma to go to school and got a couple of bachelor's degrees and then stuck around for another 10 years, did a software development startup there, got in at the ground floor of a software development startup and really learned, you know, everything you need to know about, you know, doing a startup business on an enterprise scale from that mm-hmm. experience. We went from $13 million in venture capital to $100 million in private equity sale over the course of 9 years. And we picked the worst year to start a financial services company you possibly could. So an 06, 2006 inception date. We just managed to not go bankrupt, you know, for the first 5 years or so. And then things really took off after that. You know, I believe I'm a spiritual person. I believe my path is guided. And while I was doing all that in Oklahoma, I happened to meet a woman who happened to become a doctor who happened to match the Mayo Clinic for her residency. And so the one thing in the whole universe that would have brought me back to Rochester here
yep.
did. And I wasn't sure what the heck I was going to do with my tech startup skill set in Rochester, Minnesota. I applied for one job at the Mayo Clinic.
Yep.
I couldn't even tell what the job posting was. It was kind of hard to understand. It was very high level though and kind of abstract. And I came in for an interview and they're like, you know, we've been trying to figure out this whole tech startup thing, and we're trying to find someone who's like done a successful tech startup before to come in. And, you know, we know that, you know, we're not the most gritty and agile organization, so we need to bring in that new blood to disrupt things. And I don't think they had any idea just how cool the thing was that they were doing. It was the heart of the intrapreneurship movement. So, you know, how Amazon and Google, they don't really innovate anymore. They sponsor startups underneath their vertical. And they, so I interviewed, they offered me a job on the spot, and I started 2 weeks later, which is not your normal Mayo Clinic timeline. And so for 3 years, we went from just a handful of people to 13 teams of engineers that I wow. had the privilege to lead. And we were doing about a third of all new development for the entire enterprise. So another extremely successful tech startup organization. Yep. And I have no clue, just by dumb luck, I got into that first tech startup, I feel like. And then really just, again, I think my path is guided that I got into that second startup. And and now we're doing this real estate startup as kind of like my third startup.
Yeah.
And
well, at that time, though, when when you were doing the engineering and Lane was a doctor, there was no real estate at the time.
So
was there investment property?
Yeah, there was a little bit on the side. As I said, I've always had kind of side businesses going. So I'm a car guy, and I would buy a car and fix it up and sell it. And we had a couple rental properties. So we would like my wife's house when we got married, we rented it out,
right.
And then so we haven't sold like our previous residences, but just kind of accidental landlords, I suppose. Just another kind of side hustle or something. Yep. And
you had never really done that though, or learned about it even.
Well, that first startup, I was expecting this payday that never did end up coming. That's a whole other podcast. But Googling around what to do when you get a big payday and not end up like one of those people who win the lottery and are bankrupt right. the next year or whatever, and there'd be a big tax consequence to that payday as well. So what can you do to to kind of minimize the tax consequences of that? And all my research said to invest in real estate. Mm-hmm. And so being a tech person, using the best practices from tech, you do what's called a proof of concept. So you don't just go out and build a $1 million piece of software. You build a $1,000 piece of software that's a piece of that bigger thing, or representative mm-hmm. of that bigger thing. See if that works. Then you build a $10,000 piece of software, and then a $100,000 piece of software, and you iterate to your kind of final destination or towards Absolutely. It anyway. And so we went and we did one single family home. We found kind of the cheapest house we could buy. It was a VA foreclosure that had been unoccupied for 6 years and needed a new roof, new furnace, new everything. And we did a sweat equity remodel on it. So installed all, 1,000 square feet of ceramic tile, and, my wife is, studying for med school, and I'm working at this tech startup by day. And then we'd go over to this property at night, and it's freezing cold, and there's no furnace, it's 10 degrees out or something in Oklahoma. And we haven't gotten the furnace installed yet. So we're just using like the halogen work lights to try to have enough heat to be able to put in tile, and, making sure our mortar doesn't freeze before it cures. And,
How do you know how to do all that stuff then?
Just YouTube.
Yeah.
And just asking people questions and, making mistakes and improving as we go. So that was very successful. So we bought that property, did a ton of sweat equity on it, renovated it. We paid $35,000 for that property. We spent about $17,000 every gallon of gas, every mm-hmm. snack at the gas station, whatever, is about $17,000 for all the remodel work we needed to do to it. So we spent about 50% of our purchase price on renovations. Really is probably more like, should have been like $30,000 or $40,000 if we had hired people to do it. And then when we were done, it was worth maybe $85,000 or something like that. Wow. And we still own that home to this day. But we did a cash out refinance once yep. we kind of improved the property, made it more valuable. So we were able to recover all of our capital and then do it all over again. And that basic business model is the foundation for all that we do today in our real estate business. And we just do it with, you know, larger and larger properties, more and more properties, but buying properties where there's an opportunity to, you know, take something and make it better, finding amazing, you know, residents, you know, take phenomenal care of them, and then work with a lender to do a cash out refinance to kind of recover that capital and do it over again. We've just done that over and over and over again ever since. So that's how it all kind of started as like an experiment. And then, after a while I was like, you know, this is actually like the most successful thing we've ever done. You know, this is actually like more successful than
were you enjoying it more as well?
So in tech, you can work with an engineer that you're supervising, and they can say, oh, I spent 6 weeks trying to figure out this bug and I couldn't figure it out. And then you go to another engineer and they look at it and they're like, yeah, here's the problem right here. And it's not that one engineer is, you know, not doing a good job or not as smart or whatever. It's just an incredibly abstract field to work in. And it's satisfying when you produce a really successful piece of software, but you can be unsuccessful and is very fickle whether or not you're successful. Right. When you're working on, you know, real estate, like it's so tangible. And it's like you hire a painter and the painter goes and paints the house and lo and behold, it looks a lot better when you get done. Imagine that. Now there are tons of surprises that we could have some fun stories about that. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I do enjoy real estate a lot more because it is so tangible. And we've got like a bunch of these buildings downtown that we're renovating, these old historic buildings that just haven't really seen a remodel in literally 100 years. Wow. And to go walk into those units after we're done remodeling them, like, man, it feels good. It just feels so good to see and feel and smell that finished product. And tech is really rewarding too, but you don't get that same, you know, tangible feeling. Or we're building a subdivision of townhomes right now, and we'll go out with our kids and just, you know, watch the concrete trucks pouring footings and that sort of thing. And it's just, it's a spectacle and it's fun. And here's this thing that's of, you know, indisputable permanent value that you've created from nothing.
Right.
And it's just, it's an act of pure creation that's so joyful. And you get a lot of that in engineering and in software engineering, but it's different. It's certainly a lot more abstract. Yeah.
And there's a lot of like, there's a lot of before and after. I mean, you're talking about that subdivision. I remember going out there on the groundbreaking and just piece of grass, you know, nothing there, you know, and I had Dalton Snow, one of the guys that's been developing part of the ground site. And I was out there and, you know, they had moved a ton of dirt and I'm just like, wow, this is cool. But it's just going to continue to keep changing and changing. How much like do you guys document kind of like what you're doing? Because it's got to be fun to like look back and go, wow, like this is this is what it was before. Even these old buildings, like this is what they looked like. And now we're coming in and it's just like, this is a whole new property.
Yeah, we need to document it better, that's for sure. We just hired a full-time marketing person, so that'll help with the documentation. But I think we've been so obsessed with doing that we have not have not documented as much as we should. But yeah, going in and just experiencing that is so incredibly satisfying. And everyone loves to see it happen. You know, I know when I was a kid, I would just sit and watch an excavator do its thing, you know, and now it's so neat to take our kiddos out and my son is like, oh, that's a big truck, you know, and yeah, it's incredibly tangible. And I don't know what we'll be doing years from now, but I hope that it real estate, it impacts people where they live, you know, in a literal sense. And we have the privilege to make the world a better place to live in the most tangible sense of the word. It's not some abstract, like we're going to cure world hunger. It's no, like, let's make sure that people have a clean, safe, you know, bright, you know, just joyful place to live where they're excited to live there. And that's going to make people's lives better in, you know, one of the most direct ways that you can impact people's lives. And now, you know, as we've built like this downtown campus, we're able to even, you know, lift up the character of whole blocks, you know, to go from kind of a tired old building to a classy old building.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, of Rochester.
That's, yeah, it's like right, you know, you walk out of the front door of the Mayo Clinic and you're staring at our buildings and hopefully you like what you see instead of kind of a tired old awning in front of the building. There's a really crisp new awning, and just looks inviting and historic-y and neat. And seeing the impact that we can have on the community is just so amazing and so rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So when was it exactly when you and Elaine were just like, you know, this is more than a side hustle now. We need to really pursue this with everything that we got.
Yeah, so that was the summer of 2019, so about 2.5 years ago. And that was to the day, my 3-year anniversary at Mayo. Mm. And again, I think my path is guided. I would do a lot of teaching and speaking at Mayo on software engineering and, you know, camps and seminars and stuff on like improving your skills and aligning with current, you know, modern best practice and stuff. And so I was teaching this class. It was going to be kind of a pretty huge event. And then, immediately after that was done, I was, okay, this is going to be kind of my last day. And,
right.
And this just by coincidence happened to land on like my anniversary day. And, I don't know. I just got a sense that it was time. I was so incredibly grateful for everything I had achieved in the tech realm. And I was just like, there's no way I can top this. You know, I feel like I've just done everything you can do in this, mm-hmm. in this world, and everything else that I do from here on out is going to be, I don't know, trying to chase that or something. And we fortunately had gotten to a place where our real estate portfolio, you know, was providing enough, passive income that it, you know, could replace my salary.
Right.
And we had kind of expected that my wife was going to need to relocate for her work as well. So I was gonna step back from my job a little bit early to kind of help with that transition and everything. And then I don't know if you've ever been to like a Tony Robbins event or whatever, but there happened to be this Tony Robbins event the day after my last day at work. Mm-hmm. And someone happened to give my wife a free ticket to it. And I, of course, went with her as well. And you know, Tony has a way of just getting you crazy, pumped up,
fired up. Yep.
You know, and he's like, a lot of people here are in this room because they're at a crossroads. Mm. They don't really know what's in store next. And you know, Tony has a very universal message, but like, it feels like he is talking straight to you, like dead between the eyes. Like if you like just straight to your soul. Mm-hmm. And he's like he looks right at me and he's like, I'm telling you that the best way to put it, to figure, I just kind of lost my momentum. Oh, yeah. The best way to figure out the steering wheel is to put the pedal to the metal. Mm. Most people, they just kind of think, you know, they wonder, they analyze, they doubt.
Right.
But if you just take massive action, like, you'll figure out real quick if you're going in the wrong direction.
Absolutely.
And I had just kind of stepped back from this tech thing, and my wife's, you know, medical career was going places, and there was moments of transition. You know, we had, you know, new babies and all these things, and I felt, you know, kind of not stuck, but just, you know, what's next, searching for that thing. And, you know, I looked at this real estate thing. I'm like, man, this has been really successful. What if this right. became my main thing and this wasn't a side thing? And in that day, you know, that's when everything that we've done today was born. Mm-hmm. And Tony, of course, he then runs you through exercises like, okay, we've got you pumped up. You're going to take action. Let's, you know, make some very concrete plans about what those action steps are. And right. He kind of walks you through all these exercises and stuff. And so we started our property management company. You know, he'll say, this is going to turn into like a Tony Robbins commercial here, but he says, you know, who here has a business? And I'm like, well, you know, I guess I have this business. I have the real estate business. And he's like, okay, who here is, you know, satisfied with how their business is doing? And of mm-hmm. course, no one raises their hands. No one's satisfied with how their business is doing. And he says, I promise you, that's because you're not listening to your customers. Mm-hmm. Now, you may say that you do, but not really. You're telling yourself that you're listening to your customers just to make yourself sleep well at night, but you're not. You're telling yourself things like, I don't want to do that, or I can't make money at that, or that's not our core business, or we're busy doing these other things. You need to ask yourself higher quality questions, and if you do that, you'll get higher quality answers. You need to ask yourself questions like, what would it take to do that? Or what's the thing that my customer really wants? What's the thing that my customer's been screaming at me for? And who can I hire that can do that? Or how can I make that profitable to right. do that? Your customers are constantly screaming at you with what they want. You're just deaf to it. And I'm like, son of a gun. You know, I actually had to create a metaphor to turn away business, because literally almost every single day someone would come to me and say, Nick, I really love this real estate portfolio that you and Elaine are building. Can you help me do the same? And I'm like, no, you know, we enjoy doing it, but, you know, I don't really know how to do it for other people. And eventually I literally created a metaphor. I created a script. I said, you know, we love taking care of our own kids, but we don't want to open a daycare. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, yep. I have been, you know, putting my fingers in my ears and denying the market what it's screaming at me for. Mm-hmm. So that was when we started our property management business and we started working with investors. And I literally, you know, and Tony will say, I want you to go make 3 phone calls right now. And like I called 3 people who I had like turned down in the last week. And I'm like, hey, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but you know, if we like partnered on this deal, like, would you be interested in that? They're like, sign me up. And I'm like, whoa, I haven't even told you. They're like, I don't care. Sign me up. I want to do whatever it is that you want to do. And I'm like, son of a, like,
yeah.
And you know, things just, you know, grew exponentially from there, you know? So before we were just kind of taking, you know, extra money that we'd save from our day jobs and, you know, buying real estate and, you know, kind of slowly just growing this. It's just kind of a side, you know, thing. And then we started partnering with investors and serving investors and things just grew exponentially, since then. And this past month, in December, we launched our first private equity fund. So it was
awesome.
A $10 million fund. We raised, $16 million in one day. So we were just hopelessly oversubscribed to that. And, usually you record this like really straight laced webinar or something of here's our pro formas and why we just did, we call it a telethon, cause it's just a very fun, playful kind of thing. It ran for almost 4 hours and we had raised all the capital before we had gotten off the line. Wow. And so we just answered every question. And, I think there might've been a little bit of singing and dancing involved. I don't know. Right. And, you know, we're 30 minutes in, it's like, oh wow, there's, you know, $2 million that have already been committed. And, you know, an hour in, we're like, hey, there's actually $4 million here. We might actually raise all this tonight. You know, we were thinking this would take a year or something to raise. And then, you know, pretty quickly it became obvious. We're like, oh, we got $8 million, you know, raised here. So I guess, you know, get your commits in now while you can, you know, first come first for basis. Yeah, it's just all about, you know, serving our tenants. We think that the tenant is really the core asset in this business, that relationship, not the building. I think most property management companies, most investors, the tenant is not the customer that gets served, or is, right. they don't see that tenant as the person that's, you know, paying the bills when that is the reality of the situation. And if you just take care of the tenant, we call it the resident in our business, everything's going to take care of itself. And then and then we just are fanatically dedicated to serving our investors and giving them not just a great return. In fact, we don't really lean very hard on, you know, what our average rate of return is, but like, is what you're doing good for society? Does it make the world a better place? Does it make the life of the tenant, you know, better? Mm-hmm. And if you do that and you do that well, you're going to make a lot of money. Like it will take care of itself. And, that's always been how we've done business and that's how we always will do business. And, It's been a heck of a ride so far. So who knows what the future holds? I think we'll probably have $1 billion in assets under management within the next, you know, 4 or 5 years or something on our current, you know, trajectory.
That's
and
insane.
Just, you know, working with a lot more investors and a lot more residents and just creating value anywhere we possibly can.
Nope.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of touched on, you know, part of like what your mission was there, you know. And some of that is what makes you guys different. Are there other things you think that, you know, there's obviously a lot of people in the real estate development and investing area, and you've seen a lot of success in a short period of time. Why do you think that is? You know, again, just with a lot of people doing it now, like with the internet and, you know, guys like Grant Cardone that are just, you know, like, this is what you need to do with all your money and stuff like this, you know. It's becoming more and more popular.
Yeah.
And people are trying to get into it, but obviously they haven't, or a lot haven't been successful as quick.
Yeah.
So what, you know, what are some of these things you think that, you know, were, you know, came from that basically?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of things I could speak to there. I think the first thing is just being really dedicated to serving people, to serve, in our case, you know, our residents and our investors. So like our private equity fund, there are no fees in the fund whatsoever. So there's no acquisition fee, asset management fee, capital event fee, disposition fee.
Is that different than a lot?
I've never heard of it before.
Okay.
So typically that's how most of these firms make most of their money, right, is on fees. 100% of the profit from the fund goes to our investors until we see any upside from that. And like when we're onboarding with our law firm, there's like whole worksheets they give you on your fee structure. And we're like, no, we don't need this section of our homework in there. And then they like gave it back to us. They're like, sorry, you missed the most important part. And I'm like, no, I had like draw a giant X on it, you know? And like, it took like multiple communication passes for them to really understand that we weren't charging any fees. It was so unbelievable to them. There's a reason for that. We think that if we, put the values, if we put our clients first, like we're always going to win. We did that in the past when we first started working with investors, several years ago, and that's how we're going to end up with, $1 billion in assets under management. So let's say we forego, a few hundred thousand dollars in compensation on this, $10 million fund or whatever. Mm-hmm. Who cares about that if you have, a $100 million fund a few years from now?
Right.
And, there's a lot of people who I feel like they're trying so hard to squeeze every, drop of value they can out of every deal. Mm. And we do the opposite. We lead with transparency and authenticity and lead with value. And we want our customers to be our raving fans that are telling Absolutely. Everyone about, like many of our clients, they're invested in, 10 different private equity funds or whatever. And I promise you, they are having a conversation with those people saying, right. Hey, why are you guys charging these fees? The Stagebergs, they're not charging any fees. Why are you charging fees? Why do you get paid before I do? And I mean, this might seem a little grandiose, but our goal is to change capitalism for the better in some, mm-hmm. in some small part. Your typical structure for that is there's some Wall Street persona that raises money from a bunch of investors and they charge their own kind of fees on that, and then they reach out to people like Elaine and I, operators, and invest the capital. And there's just this whole extra layer of cost and complexity. Mm-hmm. And like this summer, we're going to have a conference. We're just going to bring all of our investors out and just say, hey, do you want to come see the properties that you are invested in? There's no intermediation here. There's no obfuscation. Like you put in, $100,000 or $1 million into this fund, and you own, 3% of this building that right. you're walking through. I've never heard of anything like that before. And people are so hungry for it. People just want to be able to see, feel, and touch, what they're invested in. Absolutely. And know that it's doing good in the world. And if you focus on, how much value you can create and how much you can give, like whatever finds its way back to you is going to be tenfold what mm-hmm. what you put out there into the universe. And I know that sounds like kind of woo-woo nonsense, but like just you just have to try it. So a person just right. has to try it, and you can't try to not make money or whatever. Well, that's not true. So 5% of our fund is being donated to charity, and 5% goes to our staff. Again, we were not able to find attorneys who had encountered a structure like that before.
Right.
And we would love to one day have a zero return fund. So you put in your money, you get a full return of capital, and then after your fund, your money's back, you don't own anything in the fund. Elaine and I don't own anything in the fund, and 100% of that profit, goes to charitable causes mm-hmm. to create a perpetual funding stream for good in the world. Once you have the luxury of it, I think if you do set out to not make any money at it, you can do really incredible things.
Absolutely.
And people are just, they're very short-sighted. What if I can get a 60% split instead of a 50% split on this one deal? Like,
well, our whole world is get rich quick.
Right.
Know?
Right.
And this is where a lot of that comes from.
I'm on a very get rich slow, kind of plan, but the end outcome is that you have this exponential growth that speeds things up, in a radical kind of way. And, we're talking about like these abstract things with like a private equity fund and stuff like that. And it really doesn't have to be any more complicated. Like, so here's the thing. Our private equity fund is modeled after what I call a lemonade stand business model. So usually mm-hmm. private equity funds, it takes hundreds of pages to document all the different ways that, you know, the fund manager is compensated and the investors get their money back and how the profits are split and stuff like that. If you were to start a lemonade stand with your child, you might say, tell you what, I'll buy some sugar and some lemons.
Nope.
And I need to get my money back, and then we'll just split it, you know, 50-50 after that.
After that, yeah.
And that might be a common structure that you would employ.
Yeah.
That's our private equity fund.
Wow.
It's no more complicated than that. And if you're in any business, if you are starting a lemonade stand or a restaurant or a media company or whatever, and you need capital, if you want to partner with investors, whatever, like, make it incredibly simple. Make mm-hmm. sure that whoever your customer is, if it's an end user of your product, if it's an investor that's investing in your company, make sure you put their needs ahead of your own. And if you're successful and you do what you say you're going to do, like, they will come back in avalanches of abundance. Like, we'll work with an investor and they'll say, okay, here's my last $10,000. So please take good care of it.
Right.
And I'm like, well, if this is really your last $10,000, like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, there is risk. We've never lost money before, but there is risk investing in real estate. And, and I don't know if that's a wise choice. You should probably just leave that money in the bank. That's FDIC insured and stuff. And no, go ahead. And then, you know, we'll return that with profit. And they're like, okay. You know, so here's $100,000, but it's my last $100,000. I'm like, really? Okay. Why are you pulling my heartstrings?
Right,
how much money?
Right.
No, really. I just have $100,000. Like, okay. So we return that with a really good return. And they come back and they're like, wow, this is the best return I've ever seen on any of my investments. And, you know, I just feel so good doing it. Like, well, what could you do with $1 million? You gotta be kidding me here. Like, why?
But no, this is really my
last $1 million. You know, most people, if you just give them everything that they need, like, they are going to come back to you.
Yep.
And they're going to bring all their friends, and you're just, everything that you need will be provided for you. Mm-hmm. If you provide for others. So that's what, and then, you know, on the resident side, we have the exact same situation. We'd actually never had a single eviction until the eviction moratorium happened. And then all of a sudden people think that you can't evict. So, but that's not true. You can't evict, you know, for certain reasons or whatever. So we actually have had some evictions because of the eviction moratorium,
right.
But we never had a single eviction until then. You know, we like to, you know, treat our residents the way you might, you know, treat your grandma or whatever. Like, just treat people fairly, take good care of them, and, you know, lead with value. So, like, you know, I'm a licensed real estate agent. I, you know, have a number of agents that work for me, and, you know, we'd love to help you buy a home if you're one of our tenants. You know, most property management companies, they see home ownership as like, oh, we're going to lose our best tenants to buy homes or whatever. And we're like, man, if we can work with you year over year to get your credit squared away and save some money for a down payment and get you in touch with a lender and then help you, you know, maybe be the first person in your family who bought a home, like, that's the coolest thing we get to do, you know. And a significant portion of our tenants end up leaving our properties to buy homes. So we have a clause in our lease agreement that if we help you buy a home, you can, you know, terminate your lease for free.
Yep.
And you know, everything, just like respond to maintenance tickets, you know, just answer the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times property management companies, they just don't answer the phone. And I think that
I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah.
That's just, yeah.
Yeah. I think there's not a lot of people that when you call, you really want them to answer the phone, you know, like your attorney or the 911 or something like that. Well, when you call your landlord, there's usually something somewhat important and potentially time sensitive happening. And you might be calling them in the middle of the night because there's a water leak or your heat's not working and they need to answer the phone. They need to just show up for you. And if we do that and we serve people, they're never going to leave. We have extraordinarily low turnover. We frequently have a wait list to get into one of our properties. And people are just, they tell all their friends. We get a huge number of referrals. So it's all the same stuff. And this applies in any business. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're selling lemonade or running a property management company or, running a private equity fund, like just serve your customers like no one else is willing to. And, you will, the world will beat a path to your door. It takes a little bit of time. You know, it's maybe slower at first, but then it has an exponential kind of growth curve to it.
I mean, something I've seen just in, I feel like in investing in general, it's so much of it is the people and then their track record.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's just like, you know, if I like you and I align my beliefs with you And I see you have a proven track record. Mm-hmm. It's just like you just continue and continue to do more and more bigger, larger things.
Yep.
And there really isn't a reason for those people or investors to leave.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, why would I?
Yep.
And you just keep, and you grow and grow and grow.
Yep, absolutely. We, we're in the good situation that we never have to sell anything. So we just kind of put our values out into the universe and our track record, and people are either drawn to that or they're not. Like our best calls with investors, and we try to be very available. If someone wants to block a, you know, a 15-minute call with me, you just go to meetblackswan.com and block a time on my calendar. And the best calls start with you know, not even really sure why we're talking, just, you know, it just the values they spoke to me. And yeah, there's alignment here. So of course we're going to do business. You know, right. how can I serve you? That's how I like to start those calls. And people who are trying to sell something, I mean, it should be a pull, not a push. Like right. you should be drawn to this thing that you want to do. And if you have to be pushed in that direction, right. like no one likes that feeling.
You're not comfortable with it.
Yeah. So we just kind of put ourselves out there and make sure people know what our track record is and what our values are. And people are either drawn to that or they're not. And we think it's just the easiest, you know, thing in the world, whether or not, right. you know, someone deciding whether or not they want to do business with us and likewise.
How are you reaching these investors? I mean, Is it nationwide? Is it, you know, all of the world? I mean, how are you finding these people that are willing to invest in you, large, you know, some small and some, you know, very substantial amounts of money?
Absolutely, yeah. Referral, word of mouth is certainly the most powerful. We certainly do, you know, podcasts and interviews. So I hang my license at Keller Williams, and they said that you know, the best way to reach people is to teach and to just tell the world about what you're doing and how they can do it or what they can learn or take away from it. And at first I thought it was the most clever scheme on earth, because they're like, yeah. Nick, we're going to invite you to teach for us. And I'm like, okay, what's my compensation for this? And they're like, oh, no. You have no idea how much opportunity is going to come about as a result of this. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a clever way to get some free labor or something like that. But you know, I gave it a try, and all kinds of opportunities came about as a result of it. So once a month, we just do kind of a free we call it our community hour. We just get together and talk to people about what's on their mind. We typically have kind of a teaching topic. We have a course on so we kind of joke that, like, if you want to invest in our private equity fund, that's like going to the restaurant. If you like the product that we're making here, you can just buy it at the restaurant. Or we also offer the cookbook. So it's over 100 videos, and it goes into painful detail of our entire business model, how we do everything we do, all the way down to the exact light fixture, the exact way we get loans on properties. Because we think that our business model makes the world a better place. And if
How do people find that too?
So if you go to meetblackswan.com, we'll have a link to our free course, and you can sign up for our free community hour. And so if someone goes through our course, and we're very transparent about it, if you go read the whole cookbook and you're like, I'll just go to the restaurant, like, great, we're there to serve you that way as well. And for most people, I would say real estate is kind of intriguing to them, and they want to learn more about it. And hey, how could I do this myself? And you know, once you really get into it and you realize how involved it is, like, you're probably better off sticking to your day job, the thing that you are really skilled at, and then, you know, hiring a professional essentially to do it for you. Just like most things, like I hire a roofer to put a roof on the properties that I own. I don't go out there and swing a hammer myself. But for the people who really do want to do it themselves, we just give it all away for, well, we don't give it away for free. It's a pay what you can model. We suggest a donation of $1,500 to sign up for the course, but you can pay whatever amount you want, or maybe try it and make a donation later. 100% of the revenue goes to charity for that that course, and that's just kind of a labor of love for us. And we've spent you know, hundreds of hours putting that course together. Absolutely. and then we do a free you know, group coaching call once a month for just those students as well, to help them on their journey. So instead of talking about kind of what's on our radar, we talk about what's on their radar. And then all these ways, all these things are ways to connect with people. So We very deliberately make zero profit from any of our teaching, speaking, mm-hmm. Education. We're going to have a conference here this summer that we're really excited about. We don't want to make any money on that. We're very transparent that the only way we can make money in our entire business model is when our clients make money. So we don't take any fees in our fund. We only get paid after they get their money back, and that keeps our incentives aligned. And we're just super transparent about how we make money, which I always appreciate that when I'm you know, subscribing to something, right. When I'm paying for something, I want to know, you know, how the person I'm paying makes money on it. And then just local connections as well. So a deal we recently did, we bought two apartment buildings here in Rochester, and most of the capital for those deals came from, you know, local investors that we had built relationships with over the years doing kind of, you know, multiple deals, smaller deals together. And then we did one big deal together. And, you know, it's kind of a long story, but we would help them with, just different situations that they were struggling with. We actually never even imagined that they would invest in one of these deals. And then they reached out, like multiple local people reached out at the same time. They're like, hey, yeah, we're good for, you know, $400,000 investment or $300,000 investment or whatever. You know, this looks like a good opportunity here. And we are very frequently surprised by, you know, by how much people want to get involved. So, you know, I think that works for anybody in any industry. So, you know, if you're, I guess I could keep talking about a restaurant, but I guess literally the metaphor holds, if you're running a restaurant, go put out some YouTube videos on how to make the stuff that's at your restaurant. And once a month, do a free cooking class, you know, like an after hours cooking class, and teach people in person how to make your signature dish. Right. And if people want to cook it at home, they can. But I promise you, a lot of people are gonna.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it. Like, oh, that looks good. I'm not gonna do that. I'll just come in.
And they love the engagement. They love the experience. I promise you, they will enjoy coming to your restaurant so much more because, you know, there's no like everyone appreciates an open kitchen. You know, everyone enjoys the experience more when they have more information, they're more engaged, and they see what went into it. And most people fail to appreciate just how hard it is to achieve your end outcome. Like, oh, we have to put it in the oven at 327 degrees for 13 and a half minutes. And, you know, like, this is how you get the perfect amount of, you know, most people, they don't realize the nuance that goes into it. Anything at its apex becomes an art, right? It goes from being a science to being an art. And when you can engage people in that moment, when it goes from science to art, I think there's like a human connection moment that's really special. Like one of my favorite things, I hate small talk. So,
how's the weather?
Oh my gosh. It's like nails on chalkboard. So here's a fun thing to try and it'll work really well. I promise you or anyone listening, it's going to work really well. The next time you're in an awkward, small talky kind of situation, just cut to the chase. Just connect with that person in a really profound, potentially awkward way, and ask them about the thing that they care about the most in the world.
Interesting.
What's the thing that you're most passionate about? Like, I was talking to one of my contractors today, and I said, what's the thing that you care about most? And he's like, oh, I just got these new waders or something for ice fishing.
Okay.
And this person, I think a significant portion of his net worth is in fishing equipment.
Yeah.
And he's telling me about how they're so good, so much better than any other piece of wader fishing. I didn't quite follow it because he had some jargon and stuff I couldn't follow. But the way someone lights up when that happens, you know, walk me through that, you know, like, my favorite icebreaker, I don't know why, or it's not an icebreaker, is I'll just say, how's your marriage doing? So I have a bachelor's degree in ministry, and for some reason, the number one question that my wife and I get is not like, how can I invest with you? It's how do you two have this energy that you have? You know, how do you stay in business together and you're together 24 hours a day and you don't murder each other or whatever? Right. Like people can see that electricity that Elaine and I have when, you know, when we're doing our presentations and stuff like that. So people will, it's a, you know, like they'll do like a 15 minute call or something. And then like at the 10 minute mark, they'll just be like, how can I have that? That's what I really want. And so when I'm in, you know, in like a small talk kind of situation, I'm just like, how's your marriage doing? And it's just so blunt and so on point that, you know, there's kind of an awkward silence and they'll just say,
yeah, like, whoa,
you know, I was doing pretty well last year, but this year it's different. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Why is it different? Well, you know, I guess maybe it's COVID. I don't want to blame COVID. Like you'd think that people would have their guards up, but when you just want to serve people, when you want to connect with people.
And if it's genuine.
You can't fake it. Like, if you try to fake this, like, it'll be the most repulsive thing you could possibly do to someone. But just try to connect with someone with something that they actually care about. Mm-hmm. Don't try to make fake conversation and ask someone about the thing that, you know, that they're best at. You know, you like to drive race cars. Like, what's the moment when you win the race? Mm-hmm. I hit this turn and I run the racing line and no one else, that moment when it goes from science to art, like, there's like this, I don't know what it is, but there's this magical moment of human connection that happens that's unlike anything else. And so my whole life, I think, is just dedicated to connecting with people like that. And then, like, you know, maybe we become best friends. Maybe you invest in our private equity fund. Maybe I help you launch new business. I don't know where it goes from here, but we have this place, this mutual understanding that allows anything to happen.
Right. So, and I love that you're not looking for anything out of it specifically. And that's when it comes. Like, when the friendship comes. That's when the investment, that's when the trust, and it's like, I'm not looking for anything. I'm just genuinely care.
No, it's,
yeah. And then the world can see that. And it's like,
absolutely.
That's attractive to them.
The worst thing you can do if you're trying to be successful in business, or let's do something a little more fun than that. Let's say you're dating. Let's say you're trying to find a mate or something mm-hmm. like that. The worst way you could go about doing that, I feel like, is to like go to the market, to go to the place where everyone else is going and try to do the thing that everyone else is doing mm-hmm. to try to, like, you need to set yourself apart and you need to connect with people. And, if you do that successfully, people will be drawn to you and, this person's different over here. And you don't want to just go around saying, I want a girlfriend or boyfriend or something like that. That's about the worst way you could possibly attract someone to you. You need to be a person who is just genuine and transparent. Transparency is the currency of our day, right? Like, we live in an incredibly fake world. I was born in 1983.
Absolutely.
So I was just a couple of years too early. I'm just a couple of years too old for, like, social media and stuff. I have a friend of a friend who leases time on a corporate jet to influencers. The jet doesn't fly anywhere.
No.
The jet does not fly anywhere. Just, you lease time on the jet to just sit on the tarmac and take photos. They're booked out for months.
That is fantastic. Wow.
We live in a fake world. And this isn't a political statement, but Donald Trump became president of the United States because he's a very transparent individual. Mm-hmm. Like, love him or hate him. In fact, probably many more people hate him than love him, but they knew what they were getting.
It was the, like, bluntness and the realness in it. Yeah.
An overly transparent individual. And again, not a political statement, but, like, Hillary Clinton, like, do you really know who Hillary Clinton is, despite the fact that she's all over the media and everything? No. And when you see something on Instagram, you don't think that's real.
Right.
And the rare moments that you have in your life today where someone is real with you, where someone mm-hmm. is vulnerable, where someone is transparent, it's the most sacred and rare thing. And so whatever we can do to create those moments, to create that environment, to create those honest connections, like, good things are going to happen from that. Mm-hmm. And so, like, at our conference, you know, we're going to probably have some fun rules. I don't know what they are exactly, you know, no cell phones. You have to have at least 10 uncomfortable conversations on these topics. That's awesome. Conversation cards, like you typically have with family or whatever. Transparency is the currency of our day. And, mm-hmm. And people are so afraid to be themselves, afraid that they won't be accepted, you know, for who they are. It doesn't matter who you are. Just be yourself, and people will either be drawn to it or they won't. But they'll love you for who you are. And mm-hmm. and the people who aren't drawn to it, well, they probably won't be in your life. So it's probably for the best either way.
Right. Yeah. I remember being really early on, just in what we were doing with video, and I had a mentor at the time, and I'd be like, I was looking at so and so competition and this and that, and he made a statement just like, does it really matter what they're doing?
Exactly.
He's just like, be you, do your thing.
Exactly.
Put the blinders on and just, like, do it. And, like, since I've done that, it was just like, people buy into who we are. And, like, yes, you know, the product is good and things like that, but it's like an element of, like, you know, we care, we're doing our own thing. We have fun with it. And it's, again, it just grows. And it's like, you don't really know how. It just happens, you know?
Absolutely.
I love all that. That's awesome.
Yeah. I can tell you, I've never cross-shopped MediaCorp. like you have an appealing product. And we do the exact same thing. Like, we very deliberately do not hire people with previous property management experience, mm-hmm. and we don't go to the conferences for other property management companies. We try to just do our own thing, and right. we do what works for us. And I think it works very well. And a lot of times it can serve you well to not necessarily know what the competition is up to.
Absolutely. And,
it can almost be a really negative feedback loop, because you look at something that someone else is doing and you're like, oh, maybe I should be doing that thing. And it takes your focus off the thing that you do that you excel at, that makes you special. And you end up trying to just imitate other people.
Right.
And in business, there's two kinds of capabilities. So this is a technology concept, but it's a business concept. There's strategic capabilities and there's utility capabilities. And most people, they try to like be good at everything or whatever, but really you just need to be good at one thing. Mm-hmm. There's one thing that you do that sets you apart. Maybe when you're really big, you've got a couple of things, but probably just one thing. That's your strategic capability.
Right.
You can't hire it out. It has to be your secret sauce that just makes you special. It's your differentiating proposition, your unique selling proposition. And there's a million other things. And again, this is a technology concept, but it's really a business concept, that are called utility capabilities. So like, if you have really good HR systems, if you have really good accounting systems, like those things probably aren't going to set you apart. No one's going to mm-hmm. do business with you because you have really good yeah. payroll software right, or something right. like that. And in software, like, you know, people use Google because you type words into the box and the right things come up, and you don't really care if Google has a really good bug reporting capability.
Exactly.
It's a utility capability, so Google need not focus on that. They can maybe vend that out and have some other company write their logging software, their bug reporting software, or whatever. They need to focus, you know, just be laser focused to the exclusion of all else of, I type words into the box and the right stuff comes up. And if they do that successfully, mm-hmm. no one will care about anything else. They don't right. they don't need to know what Bing is doing as long as they get that one thing right. And, you know, MediaCorp, you know, I saw one of the MediaCorp videos, and, you know, a video came up on my screen and I felt an immediate connection with the people on the screen. And I said, that's what I need. I need mm-hmm. to connect with people. Here's the thing right here. So, you know, how much does it cost? What format is the video? Do they use Macs or PCs? Right. You know, what does their studio look like? None of these things are relevant to me. And yet those are the things that people frequently focus on. Do I have Absolutely. A really nice business card? You know, is our front desk person really qualified for their mm-hmm. job? Is, you know, do I have a college degree? Like, there's a lot of things that are just, they're just not essential. And yep. so focusing on the unique things that set you apart, that's all you need.
Well, it's interesting too, because if you have this unique thing that's just unique to you and you do it really well, I'm never going to be able to do that as well as you then.
That's right.
So it's like you're always in this perpetual, I'm just playing catch up. So it, just so much of it just goes into just do your thing.
I call that a cargo cult. So that's a fun Google. If you're listening to this right now, go Google cargo cult, cargo cult. And it's the craziest concept that might change your life. So, GIs, and this originated in the South Pacific after World War II. So GIs would come to these Pacific islands with an indigenous population, and they would build like an airstrip, and then planes would just start coming out of the sky full of cargo of food and uniforms and weapons and stuff like that. And then the war ended, and the GIs left. And so the indigenous people said, we need to get our own cargo. Mm. So they erected landing strips, and they built fake airplanes out of bamboo, and they marched in formation with fake rifles, and they flawlessly imitated all of the things Really? That they saw the GIs do, with the somewhat reasonable expectation that if they just perfectly mimicked what they saw, they would get the end outcome that the GIs got, which is these planes show up full of cargo. And they didn't, and they would build entire satellite dishes out of straw. And
wow.
How many times in your life have you been in a cargo cult. You're maybe working in a work environment and your boss says, hey, there's this new buzzword that we need to implement that I just read in Executive Quarterly. And so go get me synergy next quarter. That's mm-hmm. critical. I read in this book that, I need to learn the love language of my wife, but you're not willing to do the deep work of actually understanding her needs and meeting those needs, but she is, gift giving. That's her love language. So I'm right. good here. People are obsessed with mimicry and then they're confused when they don't get the outcome. And I am a student of, I love to learn deeply and to sit down with someone and say, you know, what's the moment when the thing that you care about the most goes from, you know, science to art, when you go from kind of a cargo cult to the thing that makes it the thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think a lot of people spend a lot of their lives in a cargo cult without ever realizing it. You know, if I just mimic what the competition is doing, right. or what I read in this book, I'm going to get the outcome, and you never do. That's not how life works.
And you don't really think about it though. You do it, but you don't deeply think of why and what and, you know, all these things. So yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of shifting, just cause we're low on time. I want to get into maybe a few specifics. When you're putting real estate deals together, you know, because I know that you have, you're currently working on a whole development, mm-hmm. and you're also buying old apartment buildings, mm-hmm. you know. What goes into like your thought process and, you know, how it works to go like this deal makes sense. We're going to mm-hmm. do this.
Yeah. it could be a long answer.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a pithy way. So there's, certain financial targets we're sort of trying to hit, but I think people get really obsessed with that in any business. They're mm-hmm. like, oh, I want to make X number of dollars or hit a certain rate of return or something. And that's really not something that we underwrite to.
Okay.
So we ask ourselves, does this align with like our core product? So let's say a property comes up for sale that's next door to a property we already own. We're buying that property. Like it almost is irrelevant what the pro forma says or the rate of return or the price. I mean, those are relevant. We're not going to pay, you know,
right.
some ridiculous price or whatever. But we know that because we already own the next door neighbor and presumably the next door neighbor is doing well, we're probably going to do well with this property as well, or this aligns with our core competence. So people, present deals to us on a daily basis and, oh, mm-hmm. well, you know, why do you want to buy this shopping mall over here? Well, let's see. It's out of state. It's an asset class we're unfamiliar with. And I don't feel like shopping malls are doing so great right this second. So no, like I don't need to see a pro forma. I don't need to model anything out. I think it's critical. So focus on your core competence. Warren Buffett calls it your sphere of competence. Something that you have a track record of success. And maybe if you're just getting started out, you say, oh, well, I don't have track record. Some of the most successful people I've seen in all of business are people that have a small pivot. So for example, let's say you are a lender, a commercial lender, a mortgage lender or whatever, and you say, I want to invest in real estate. Well, I'm a W-2 worker. I've never owned a business in my life. I don't know anything about real estate or how to start a business, so I don't know what to do. Well, if you think about it, it's not a big pivot to go from being a lender of money to a borrower of money. And one of the most critical things on any real estate deal is the kind and quality of debt that you get. And as someone with years of experience in a Rolodex of contacts in lending, you can probably get a better loan than just about anyone else. So that probably a better loan than I can. And you probably know all the right people to call that are in affiliated industries. And this is a huge competitive advantage you have over someone else that's coming from, you know, from no background. Maybe they've started, you know, 10 businesses before and this whole real estate thing is a new business for them. Yep. And they've got kind of a track record of success there, but they don't know how to get a loan to save their life. So what's the thing that you have experience and an unfair advantage or a competitive advantage in? That's the most important thing, I think. And then in terms of, partnership or structuring, which I think you'd kind of hinted at there, it's all about alignment of incentives. So, mm-hmm. And this isn't necessarily like just with a business partner. This is with an employee or with a contractor, with anyone who gives you value, with anyone that you have a conversation with. Make sure that your incentives are aligned. And if you do that, everything is going to take care of itself. And a lot of times people want to kind of just squeeze every drop of value they can out of every relationship. And that's so short-sighted. So like when I'm working with a contractor, I don't tell them what to do when I'm walking a job site. That would deny me the most valuable thing they have to offer, which is their expertise and their background and a different set of eyes. Like I ask them, what should I do? What should I do? Now, theoretically, I'm this, hoity-toity fund manager persona that's so much smarter than they are. No. When it comes to what do we want to do to paint this apartment building, they know more than I will ever know. They are the subject matter expert in their domain, and I'm here as a student, not a teacher. And I want to make sure that they make as much money as they can from this deal, because I want them to be really excited about doing the next deal, right, and the next deal and the next deal. And if I'm trying to hold their feet to the fire over, oh, we missed a spot here, there's a touch up here, or you said it was going to look, gray, but it looks kind of blue. Like maybe I could get them to do a repaint for free or something like that, but they're never going to do business with me again. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen. And, when you're working with investors, it's easy to, the honest to goodness truth is it's easy to disenfranchise an investor. Like they don't really know what's going on in the deal. And it's a trust-based thing. A lot of people, they shave, extra things off the margin here and there. And I think that if you just deliver the most insane return this investor has ever gotten in their life, like they're going to come back to you with so much more and with all their friends. And so in everything that we do, we make sure that our incentives are aligned. So that, we make money when our partners make money, and we lose money if our partners lose money. Mm-hmm. And let's say you're structuring a business deal and you get certain fees when certain events occur, here's an example of how to not put together a deal. It's common in the real estate industry for the person running the deal to get a fee when you acquire the asset, a fee to manage the asset, a fee to refinance or have some kind of recapitalization event with the asset, and a fee when you sell the asset. So let's think about that for a second. You buy this property, and let's say things don't go so good, and they're getting like a piece of the upside, so to speak, and they get some fees on the front end of the deal before the investor gets a return, and it's getting to a point where it's clear there's not going to be like an immediate pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. There's been a downturn in the market or whatever, and because they don't necessarily share like a piece of that downside event, they suddenly have this incentive to just kind of dump the asset because they can collect another fee when the asset sells. So it's possible for the investor to lose money and the person running the deal to make money.
Right.
It's unusual, but it does happen, and it could happen a lot if there was a big downturn event like there was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And likewise, it's common to structure these deals so that you get these massive bonuses if you hit certain performance benchmarks or whatever. And let's say the deal is going absolutely phenomenal, and there's an incentive here that if we sell this thing really quickly, your rate of return is really high because that total amount of time in the deal is so short. And so again, they sell the deal right away so they can get these huge, bonuses.
Right.
And the way we do it is we're on a straight, split with our investors. So if things go poorly, if things go well, like we're in this together and our compensation is identical. Mm. So they get all their money back before we get anything. And that's a 50-50 split after that. And so it's mathematically impossible for our incentives to become disaligned. Right. And I see people all the time that, they'll come to me, they have an idea for how to start a business or how to structure a deal or whatever. And I'll ask them, what their structure looks like, and they'll kind of go through their, list of terms or whatever. And in 30 seconds, I can say, okay, well, what happens if this happens? I can tell you that because you have these pieces of complexity in your arrangement, if this happens, all of a sudden, you know, your partnership is way out of whack. And then finally there has to be one voice. There has to be one clear decision maker.
Right.
I've been in deals that are, 50-50 partnerships. So you have to have, full agreement between both partners. And, the weird thing is those structures, they never become paralyzed on big decisions. They become paralyzed on little decisions. Like I've literally had a multi-hour phone call about what paint color to use. And I'm like, okay, we're done with this conversation. I'm going to do whatever you want because I'm not going to hold this deal up over it, but
right. Here's
the color we put in every other deal. We'd really like to use that exact same color here to have standardized systems and processes. I know this blue hue color would probably look a little bit better with this property, but that's not how this works, So, whether you're the person who has, kind of executive power in the relationship or not, like there should be one person that has, full say over all day-to-day operational decisions and ideally strategic decisions as well. And you almost always get the best outcome when there's one, one decider, one decision maker that's, appropriately incentivized where all of your incentives are aligned.
Oh, I really like that. So a lot of people, just that listen, are interested in business and it could be real estate, investing in general. for someone that is just not as far along or just, I even got guys here, employees that are just like, I want to invest on the side and kind of thing, just it is growing.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell that person that is getting started on where the best route is to go?
Absolutely. So, I'd get the cookbook. I'd go take our course. So,
yeah.
Again, just go to meetblackswan.com and you can sign up for the course. I think the most important thing about starting is to start.
Mm.
And most people get stuck in, analysis paralysis of, oh man, I should buy some crypto or,
right.
Oh man, I should go buy a single family home or I should go invest in the stock market or whatever. I think that if you want to go invest in our private equity fund, you go to blackswanfund2.com and we've got a wait list set up for our next fund when that does come along, if you want the restaurant experience there. So just being selfishly motivated, I'd say that is the best way to start is to invest with us. But seriously, the number one outcome, I've kind of hammered on this probably too much, but the number one outcome from any deal that you do is not like the profit from that deal. It's, does this set you up for future success?
Mm-hmm.
What relationship have you built? What have you learned? I would be elated to get a 0% split to get into a business deal with Warren Buffett. I know I would learn a lot. I would get connected. I would grow so much and my next deal would be that much better. And I'm going to try hard to make Warren as much money as I can. So he is excited to do the next deal with me. So, find people who are further ahead than you are and offer value. We're hiring right now, by the way, but, just get into, whatever the space is that you want to get into, take action. It doesn't have to be a huge commitment, but you should put something in. Don't just think about it. Like, let's say you want to invest in cryptocurrency, which I don't recommend, but, put $10 into something and you will be a million times more motivated to learn to grow from it. And people get hung up on, what's my split or how much money am I going to make off of this deal or this investment? It is immaterial. If I'm sure anyone would agree that if your investment is really successful, it's going to lead to more investments.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really doesn't matter what your split or profit or whatever is. What matters is, does it get you to the next stage of that growth trajectory? And that was certainly a lesson that took me a long time to learn in tech, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did figure that out in tech, like I just literally need to get around the most successful software engineers that I have ever met and do what they're doing and work on projects with them and try to be the least experienced, least smart person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then in real estate, it's that, kind of on steroids because there's a capital component to it that's not present with software engineering. So like any software engineer can write better code than any other software engineer, but I can't necessarily go do a better deal than Warren Buffett cause he's got a lot more capital to work with. So it's an unfair fight, so to speak there. So I really want to build relationships with these people and partner with these people and get into deals with these people. And if I do that, I'm going to be extraordinarily successful. The most successful investors that we've worked with are the people who, Say, hey, you know, there's alignment here. What can I do to offer you value? Okay, yeah, we'll invest in that deal. And then, without being annoying, try to get as much education as they can possibly get. Hey, why did we decide to do that here? And, you know, what were the options? You know, is there a different? Now, they're not saying, hey, I would have done something different here. They're saying, why did we do something? What do I have to learn from being involved in this thing? And if you do that, if you put the pedal to the metal, you're going to figure out the steering wheel in a real big hurry.
I love it. Well, thank you for coming on today.
My pleasure.
This has been just awesome. Thank you for the listeners that are tuning in. And we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.